Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Life.
Love.
And health.
I'm Christopher Springman. You're listening to Life, Love, and Health on Radio MD. We're back with our guest, Jana Malamud-Smith, author of An Absorbing Errand, subtitled How Artists and Craftspeople Make Their Way to Mastery. You noticed how I desexed that word on the cover of your book? My daughter occasionally calls me spring person to instead of spring man.
I have a son who refers to males and females as they and them because...
Oh, yes, and there.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
absolutely.
And there. So I stand corrected.
In your book, you discuss fear,
yes.
which is a fascinating topic, and fear as a tremendous creative inhibitor for people. Why is that? And frankly, you know, when people plunk down in your couch, and I'm using the stereotype of the psychoanalyst with the couch, they just spew forth very often all their fears and anxieties and insecurities. Why is that?
Well, life is scary.
Don't
you think?
Oh, yeah, no, I've signed up. Yes, it is scary.
But what I do in the book is I look at a bunch of emotional states that I think keep people from staying like with their work long enough to get good at it. So, like, suppose you wanted, you know, to be a great photographer, and you discovered, though, that every single time you got near your camera, you would think, you know, I'd rather go for a bicycle ride. Thank you very much.
Oh, you know, wait a minute. Let me interrupt you.
Yes.
Because I have an associative mind. Everything reminds me of something.
Sure.
There is a classic New Yorker cartoon. It's a template cartoon that's it's updated every few years. Shows the writer, you know, in his or her garret sitting with, well, in the old days it was a typewriter, but surrounded by crumpled up pieces of paper and an ashtray filled with, you know, hundreds of cigarette butts. And on the shoulder of the writer, on one side is the devil, and the other side is an angel. And the angel is saying, oh, Christopher, you're wonderful. One more chapter today. Just one more chapter, and you'll be close to your goal. It'll be wonderful. You are a terrific person. But then the devil says, nah, come on, Chris. Let's go down to Maury's Bar. All your friends are going to be there. You know you're going to have a good time. Let's get the hell out of here, you know? Curl up with your close personal friend Jack Daniels or Johnny Walker, and you'll find the inspiration you need. I mean, this is the struggle, isn't it?
It is absolutely the struggle, and you've captured it beautifully. And I think that all of us have about, you know, 50 of those voices in our heads when we sit down to do any kind of piece of work. And it's exactly those voices that interest me. And one of the things I do in the book is try to make myself a companion to the artist, to the craftsperson, to help them figure out ways of using those voices to help to move their work forward rather than to interfere with it.
Oh, Jana, will you be my new best friend?
I promise.
Ooh. You know, there was a great scene a few years ago on the Larry King Show. Now, let me set this up and give you context for what I'm about to say. Larry King was infamous, was notorious for not doing his homework. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm Larry King. I've done 10,562 interviews. I'll just wing it. Well, one night he had Jerry Seinfeld on, a soul brother, and Jerry was talking about his show, which had just gone off the air. You know, Larry, 9 years, 180 episodes, we really did well. The number one show on TV. And King said, okay, so did you just quit or were you canceled? You can find this on YouTube, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And Seinfeld looked at King incredulously and said, do you know who I am? We had 75 million viewers for our last show, the most popular show in television history. He said, don't you have a staff that gives you bios and stuff? And do you know? And then he repeated it. Do you know who I am? And King said, well, you're a Jewish guy from Brooklyn. Well, you know, he played that card. That didn't work. And suddenly I realized I was looking at Seinfeld, a classic insecure artist. You know, and every actor will tell you, oh, the phone will never ring again. I'll never work again. This is it. I've had it, despite my success, despite all those millions. What's going on there, doctor?
Well, I probably a lot of things, but, you know, one of them is the old Hollywood phrase that you're only as good as your last hit.
Mm.
So there is a reality to that, and the thing about the creative process is even though being under a certain amount of pressure can be useful sometimes, the idea that every single time you're in the crunch, you can pull a Don Draper and pull out the best ad you've ever created is just completely not true. And I think people are made very, very anxious by that. But I also think that people who are interested in the level of ambition that Jerry Seinfeld talks about, represents, often are trying to heal something in themselves by creating a better version in their art. And I think a lot of artists do that, that all the imperfections that we all have to live with every day and the kinds of self-hate or self-dislike that can come out of that.
Self-loathing.
Self-loathing if, yes. if you're big time. People try to make something so beautiful in their work that it overcomes that for them.
Many people carry within their hearts, it has been said, an aching sense that they have something they want to express through art or that they feel will not be complete until they've brought it out of some hidden part of themselves. How do you characterize a comment like that?
Well, I think that what I'm trying to say in that is that so many people know that the person who's seen on the street isn't all there is to them. And part of what's hard now is that because we no longer live in communities where our lives are witnessed, where somebody who went to, kindergarten with us also went to college with us, that's unusual now for most people. So people don't feel terribly well known. And that's both sort of the good news and the bad news. The good news is that there's some freedom in that. The bad news is that people kind of ache to be seen in good ways, to be seen more deeply, to be seen more thoroughly, and to be seen with eyes that are admiring.
Well, that's the joy of your book, An Absorbing Air and How Artists and Craftsmen Make Their Way to Mastery, available at Amazon.com, is that people who are creative will find themselves in this book. I think this book certainly tells or addresses my story. You've also said that, you began the book with the premise that a misunderstanding of unconscious inner conflicts can bruise your heart, arrest your efforts prematurely, and prevent you from staying absorbed in your personal absorbing errand.
Exactly.
Why is that important?
Why is it important to stay absorbed, or why is it?
Well, why is it important to understand all these things that may be occurring within you on an unconscious level?
It's important because they're so disruptive. The minute you go toward your creative process, you go toward your unconscious life, and your unconscious life is not such an easy thing always. It's not pretty. It's not Disney World. It's, sometimes battling armies or nightmares or all kinds of mixes of things. That's the wonderful richness of it. But the minute you get near that richness, it can be overwhelming, and it can kind of surprise you of the impact and the depth of what it will make you feel.
The book is An Absorbing Errand, How Artists and Craftsmen, or Craftspeople as the case may be, Make Their Way to Mastery. Jana Malamud-Smith, the author and psychotherapist, thank you so much for joining us today on Life, Love, and Health on Radio MD. Say you're getting a new hip. Do you get a new sex life to go with it? I'm Christopher Springman for the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
Like any other activity that involves any sort of exertion, if you're having a lot of pain, it's not much fun.
Dr. David Llewellyn, a Mayo Clinic orthopedic surgeon, specializes in hip and knee arthroplasty.
Sexual activity does represent something of a risk to patients with total hip replacement. The position at risk for patients is when they flex their hip and bring their knee across the midline of their body and then rotate it internally. The more that you flex at the waist with your hip, the further apart your knees need to be in order to be safe.
Different surgeons suggest different waiting periods before resuming normal sexual activity. What's right for you? For more information, visit the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons website at orthoinfo.com.